Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for another episode. On this episode, my guest is Drill Instructor Bob Carter. We talk about Mid-Atlantic, the Savaldis, Stampede, Continental, and much, much more. Even if you're not familiar with the career of Bob Carter, you're going to enjoy this talk. So stay tuned. It is a ton of fun. Bob was a great guest, and I look forward to you hearing it. Hopefully everybody's been doing well out there as we dive into this fall season, and Halloween is right around the bend. Hopefully you guys are taking some time to spend with your families and enjoy this spooky season. Guys, I have to say thank you for all of your listens here lately. The numbers have been great. You guys have been very supportive, very interactive. Thank you so much. It is truly appreciated. I'm glad you're enjoying everything that I am putting out there. And again, got another great one for you today. So let's take a break and we'll come right back with my guest, Bob Carter. So stick around.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to the Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. for all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number two, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider. And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by D.I. Bob Carter. Bob, how are you?
I'm well, sir. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You got a fun career. I'm looking forward to talking about it. But let's start. Where are you from?
I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts before I went in the Marine Corps.
All right. Did you grow up a fan of wrestling? Were you a WWF guy?
It's funny. I spent a year in college, and my semester, I had a semester at Framingham State, and there was a kid by the name of Riley that we did a like a wrestling talk show on the college radio station.
Oh yeah.
And used to do all kinds of impressions and stuff like that. So yeah.
So who were your favorites growing up there in the Northeast?
Well, it's funny, you had to. So you got to realize that, you know, I'm 61 years old. So, so back then it was the old WWWF.
Yeah.
And wrestling in Boston live was on the Saturday after the welfare checks came out. And it was very ethnic in the sense that you had your Pedro Morales for the Puerto Ricans and you had your Bruno Sammartino for the Italians. And so you had cowboys and Indians. And so it was different, you know, it was different. Yeah. And I've always been somewhat, you know, I've always been a heel, I think, before I was a heel. So I always liked the heels, you know.
Yeah. And as you mentioned earlier, you served in the Marines.
Right.
Tell us about that. When was that and how many years you served and everything?
I was in Grenada and Beirut. I was in the Marine Corps 4 years. I was in Grenada and Beirut in combat most of 1983. And then got out in 85. So it was a quick run through the grinder.
Yeah. Well, and so it says you were trained by Nelson Royal and Gene Anderson.
Yeah, so that's correct.
How did you come to meet these two and come to the world of professional wrestling? How did that happen?
I was working in the gym business and the health club business, and I was selling memberships, and I was pretty good at it. And the company that I was working for put me out as a consultant to other gyms, and the gym that hired me was one that Gene Ligon was involved in. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I would ride with Gene to TVs now and then, you know, and kind of watching the thing, and I'm like, shit, I can do this. And I was 6'4", 250, 260. When I got out, you know, after getting out of the Marine Corps and all that. So Gene says, you know, do you want to try out? And I said, yeah, I guess, you know. So 250 Yahoos show up at Nelson Royal's farm in Mooresville, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. It happened to be on my birthday. I'm born July the 12th, and it's hotter than balls.
Yeah.
And the first thing you do is you run a 5 mile run around this outside of this cornfield. Then you do 500 free body squats. Then you had a 1.5 mile shuttle run. Then you had the similar shuttle run with a guy on your back, and then one where you're on his back. And then you you did one push-up and sprinted 50 yards, did two push-ups, sprint, three push-ups, sprint, till you did 25 push-ups. And that's 250 in case you ain't adding up right. and then you got in the ring with somebody that could shoot, and they had me turned upside down like a pretzel. My elbow was in my ass socket, and there was, of the 250 that showed up that day, some of them wearing their fucking gimmicks and shit. Pardon my French.
No, that's all right. Say whatever you want.
And some of them in their gimmicks, a couple of them brought their valets. 250 guys showed up, four of us made it. And we went to, then we started in school. I went to school with like Ricky Nelson and Tommy Barrett, Tommy Angel, you know him as Tommy Angel. Yep, yep. Rusty Riddle came later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Colt Steele.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mitch Snow.
Yep.
We had a lot of good, guys, you know, kind of came through. Larry, Stevens, just trying to look in my head for names that I haven't spoken in 40 years.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. Gene Anderson was a unique human being, to say the least. We'll never forget him. And some of the stuff that he did post stroke and everything else is legendary. I watched him put the two Road Warriors on their knees screaming. He had one, you know, test of strength, right? He had one with one hand and one with the other, and they were both on their knees screaming for mercy.
Yeah.
But, and Nelson was so tough and, you know, such a perfectionist. You know, in the ring, you know, just always knew where he was, always, you know. When you had that kind of people working with you, you learned at a different level.
Yeah. Nelson Royal is a name that's getting lost to time, but he was an unbelievable talent, right? I mean, junior heavyweight champion.
Yeah, he was world junior heavyweight champion. And
yeah.
And he could work both, you know, he could work both sides of the dressing room. You know, but he was not the biggest, tallest, whatever.
Yeah.
But damn it, he wasn't one of the toughest. When he hit you with a chop, I'm going to tell you something, your kidneys jiggled. it was an experience. And he and his family took, you know, they took me in, and they had a trailer on the property. You know, near their main house, and you know, I mucked stalls and fed horses, and my roommate was the furrier that did the horseshoes and all that stuff. You know, he looked out for me and kind of gave me a home, which was needed at that time.
Yeah, 25 years later, Nelson Royal would have been a bigger star when size didn't matter as much.
Yeah,
he would have really stood out.
I mean, he stood out then.
The thing is,
wrestling. Without sounding like the old guy that, you know, I mean, the business, when the business went from the territories to the national, you know, all national all the time, the work changed.
Right.
And you had guys that in, you know, those that top to bottom on any card could work for days. And you know, and they had to do it, if you go and watch fill in the blank name anywhere today, and you see them work on Friday in Los Angeles and Sunday in, say, Seattle, you're going to see the same match. And that didn't fly in the territories, because you had people that traveled, literally would drive from town to town weekend, you know, because you wrestled on a schedule. You're in XYZ town every night, you know, in a different town. And, you know, you better know how to work, because those people would boo you right out of the building.
Yep.
Absolutely. So there was a, you know, Nelson was just involved in a different business that, you know. That unfortunately, unless you, you know, are a real student and watch YouTube and scratchy VHS copies that have made it to YouTube, you know, you won't appreciate it.
Right. But, yeah.
Which is a different business.
Yeah, it was different. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you jumped around a lot, but let's talk. I'm curious, because you did kind of I think it was pretty much a one-off for the Crockett's, where you did a Russian gimmick.
You're right.
And, you teamed with, I believe, Ivan Koloff, Vladimir Petrov, and you were called the Big Red Machine. I think you were probably under a hood, under a mask.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
So tell us about that. How did it come off that just this one-off appearance?
That was match number one. That was match number one.
That was your first match?
Very first match. The very first match I got paid for.
Yeah, right. That. Yeah.
So I'll tell you the precursor to that story. So I had, you know, I've been trained and all that stuff, and was just kind of waiting to see, you know, a lot of the guys were getting some matches on TV, you know, enhancement matches or whatever you want to call them, jobbers, and we're getting our asses kicked. And but I'd gone home to Boston for something, and they were having a show, and Tony Altomori, who was Lou Albano's partner back in the day.
Yeah, the Sicilians.
He was running a show near my house, and you know, they needed a referee or whatever. So I went and I worked the show, and I reffed, and came to the back after the last match, and he was gone, and so wasn't the money. So I didn't get paid. So that never happened again. Anyway, so my first paid match, Gene Anderson called me and said, hey, I need you under a hood Tuesday in TV in Columbia, South Carolina. I said, okay. He said, call Ivan and work out, you know, trans with him. So I met Ivan, and we all piled into his car. We had a big Lincoln or something, Cadillac. It was one of those. Anyway, we all piled in there, and he got me hooked up with a singlet, and I had some boots, and we went down to Columbia, and it was Dusty, Nikita, and Dickie Murdoch. It was the night that Dickie Murdoch turned on Dusty.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, they started the match, and then Nikita comes in, and I'm supposed to be the you know, the Big Red Machine that was brought over to take him out, and boom, 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 and I take the sickle of the month. and did a 360 off the sickle. So and that was kind of it. And then I had been working to get booked, and got a spot working for Mario Savoldi.
Right.
And I started with Mario and Angelo up in New England and northern Canada, you know, up towards Canada and all that. So
yeah, like a completely different gimmick there, right? Because you went from playing a masked Russian to playing Irish Bobby O'Brien.
Yeah, Irish Bobby O'Brien didn't make a dime.
Yeah. But, I gotta ask, Bob, do you have any Irish in your bloodline?
Yeah, actually, there's a little bit. My father was English and Irish. Yeah, my father was English and Irish. My mother's Italian. So,
did Mario just look at you and say, "Oh, we need an Irish gimmick here"?
No, I'd kind of been working the gimmick. You know, but part of working at Nelson and with Nelson and Gene is you start to try to put together some kind of character, you know.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
So I went up there, and I'll tell you what, there was so many that was a unique spot, because they would get kind of talent that was kind of, you know, had a big name at one point, and they build a card, you know, with them, like, you know, they'd have one or two pieces of really top talent, and then there was a lot of younger guys, you know, and some mid-carders that were, you know, doing pretty good, you know, I went up there, and I was jerking curtains, and you know, but we were working, you know, we were working a lot of weekends, you know, like Thursday through Sunday kind of deals. You know, we'd go over to Grossinger's in New York and in the Jewish Alps. We'd go down along parts of Long Island. We'd go, all around Maine, Lewiston, Bangor. We'd go up into Montreal, over to over to Ontario, just above the Niagara Falls, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
But like one show in particular sticks out. So I get the dressing room, and you know, Nelson and Gene had trained us well that, you know, you go in, you say hello to everybody, you sit down, you shut your mouth. You know, there's no, you don't need to be talking. And so I'm sitting there and getting my gear together, and like I told you, there's a lot of young talent up there, and but they weren't as well trained. And, you know, they're talking, they're, you know, what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. And they're talking to Black Jack Mulligan like they're on his level. And finally Mulligan listened about enough of this. And he looks at me, and I'm sitting, you know, maybe, I don't know, 20 yards from him. He said, "What are you going to tell me?" I said, "I'm going to tell you that I'm going to put my boots on and sit over here and keep my damn mouth shut." He says, "Oh, hell no." He said, you bring your shit over here." And he had me sit next to him. So we're talking, and find out, you know, that I was in the Marines and he was a Marine. So anyway, it was, you know, we had eaten some similar dirt. And the match, the main event was an Bring What You Want Battle Royal. So there are people walking around the dressing room with bats with barbed wire on them, trash cans, hockey sticks, metal things, hammers. I'm like, stuff that looked like it would hurt. Mm-hmm. And Mulligan looks at me and said, "What do you got?" I said, "Well, I got these chalkboard erasers that I wrapped in brick colored tape." He said, "I'm with you, kid." So he and I got in there. We grabbed a corner and proceeded to pound the living crap out of each other with these chalkboard erasers. Because every time you'd hit something with it, you know, the chalk would fly. So anyway, we had it was just awesome.
But anyway, it's like some of the guys forgot how to work. Forgot the work part, right?
Oh no, yeah. And back then, you know, there was always a lot of battle royals and things like that. And
yeah,
I mean, I watch some of this stuff that they do today in the middle of a battle royal, and I'm thinking I'm surprised somebody hasn't broken their leg or something. I mean, there's too much flipping and flopping, you know. I honestly, you know, somebody said, "Well, you know, how would you do today?" I said, "I don't know if I would do that well today."
Yeah.
Because I wrestled on the ground and told a story and took and grabbed a body part and, you know, whatever. But, you know, like I said, that I admire the athleticism. I admire the stuff they can do. I know I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be, I don't think I'd be very good, you know, unless I could talk to them. I mean,
yeah. I worked a little bit in the late 90s, early 2000s, mostly managing. Then I did a little bit in the ring, but one of the top rules, all the veterans told me, "Hey, you get their kid in a battle royal. Don't bump. Don't bump. 'Cause you're going to get hurt." And it's like now it's like, that doesn't apply. Probably.
Yeah, they don't. I don't know what. Apparently, there are no rules. So they change the rules,
I guess.
But yeah. So anyway, so I went up there to Savoldi's and, you know, I worked with the Power Twins. And Ivan Putski was in with his son Scott.
Yeah.
And when Scott had graduated from TCU, Scott was a hell of a fullback, running back from TCU. And then we had like Brandy and Kahlua and Eric Spracia, and they had there was definitely, like I said, there was that spattering of guys that were kind of on the way up. It was a spattering of guys that, I don't know what they were doing. They should have stayed home. And then there was the guys that, you know, had made a name and were just, you know, like Tony Atlas was there. He was always fun. One night I had Iron Sheik and the promoter. We had the Iron Sheik and Tony Atlas. And the promoter, Mario, says to me, "Bobby, I need you to get these two to Long Island." And we were in, like, Lewiston, Maine.
Oh, boy.
And I said, "Listen, boss," I said, "I got a four-door, you know, Renault Alliance." I said, "How the hell am I going to do that?" He said, "Stuff them in there and get them there." I said, "All right." So we get in the car. I got Sheik in the front seat and Tony taking up the entire back, and uncomfortable as he could possibly be. And Sheiky goes, Bobby, we must have stopped at the state police barracks in Portland, Maine." I said, "For what?" He said, "They confiscated my hash pipe. I got to get to my hash pipe. I smoke a dope with all the great wrestlers." I'm like, "Cheeky, we're not stopping for that, pal. That's a hard no." So we took him to my house in Boston, my mom's house. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, then my mother, God bless her, got up and cooked dinner for them. And we ate, and then we went to the gym the next morning, and we get to the gym, and Atlas says, "Bobby, I'm gonna bench today." I said, "Okay." He said, "I need a spot." I'm like, "Okay, well, call me when you need me," you know. So he whistles at me. I went over there. I looked at the bar real quick. He's got 650 on the bar. I said, "Tony," I said, no disrespect to your brother. I said, "But if you can't get this up, I'm dumping it to your right because I cannot get this off of you."
Yeah.
So, but he proceeds to push 650 for a triple on a pause. 1,001, boom, up it went. 1,001, boom, up it went. I mean, one of the strongest human beings I'd ever been anywhere with, and did a triple with 650 pounds on the bar like it was nothing.
Yeah, he's a. I can only imagine what a car ride with Iron Sheik and Tony Atlas.
Oh, yeah, that was 7 hours of God knows what.
Well, you also did some time in Calgary.
Yeah,
and this is often an underappreciated time in Stampede for me because there is still a lot of talent there, right? You had Owen Hart, Brian Pillman, lots of other guys, but you always hear about, you know, working in that area, the drives were bad, and some of the situation. What did you enjoy your time working for Stampede Calgary?
Yes and no. My car blew up. On the way there, I actually had to take a bus from Buffalo to Calgary, 55 hours across Canada.
Yeah.
I get to the bus station. I call Stu, and I said, "You know, Stu, this is O'Brien. I'm here." He goes, "Who are you?" He sends his son, Smith, down to pick me up and take me to the St. Regis Hotel.
Okay.
This $65 a week flop house, 11 stories, looking over an alley where Native American Indians get drunk and stab each other on a nightly basis. The bedroom, the room had a tub in the middle of it, and you had to go across the hall to shit and shower with all the rest of the vagrants. But, and then, you know, they like to take liberties. You know, they have to try you, you know. I got my head bounced off the, floor in Edmonton onto the concrete on a DDT where the guy didn't protect me. And so I'm there, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, and Stu comes in and he says, "O'Brien, we're going to change your gimmick. We're going to call you Father O'Brien. You're going to come to the ring in a cassock carrying the Bible. And when fella gets the best of you, you're going to get out the brass knucks and give him a whack." To which I said, "Fuck you. I'm fucking Catholic. I'm going to get hit by fucking lightning."
Yeah.
Well, the truth is, if I had any damn sense, I'd have done the gimmick. You know what I mean? I think it would have been pretty funny.
Yeah.
But anyway, I at that point recognized that it wasn't going to go well, and I got a hold of Robert Fuller.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they brought me from Calgary as Irish Bobby O'Brien to Birmingham. Then was called the Southeastern then, before they sold it and it became Continental and CWF.
Yeah.
The, Yeah, so I went from Calgary down to the Fullers.
Yeah, which is probably the time you're most known for, right? That's where you started doing the DI Bob Carter. So how did that come out? Was that an ideal from the Fullers? An ideal you had?
That was mine. Yeah. That was
all mine. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, right, you're a former Marine, right? It's played a little bit on reality.
Yeah, there was enough reality in it, and you know I mean without it sounding I was authentic, you know,
right,
as far as, and you know, I mean it gave me a little bit of freedom, you know, especially with the mic, and you know, they, when I got there, you know, I'd go out, jerk the curtain, you know, and then they bring me back in the main event, or the semi-main event with them. Like I like Fuller and Golden, I was like the third wheel, you know, and I'd bump and take the falls and stuff. And I got some great experience getting to work with, you know, the Armstrongs and with, you know, the Southern Boys and all that. And then, it's funny that there's, when you're in it, you know what's going on. When you've been out of it as long as I have, you forget stuff. But at some point, they sold the territory they sold it, and Eddie Gilbert came in with Paulie.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they put me with Randy Colley in Detroit Demolition. And then we brought up Mark Young, who was Chief J. Strongbow's son.
Yep, right.
And he had spent time in the Army, a couple of years in the Army, and we brought him up as my private.
And, yeah, you had a group, right, called the Honor Guard.
Yeah, the Honor Guard. It was just the three of us, yeah. But it was, you know, then we got to work with, we did a three-way. Well, Randy and I had worked with we'd worked with the Southern Boys. We worked with the Nightmares, Danny Davis, and Wayne, what was his name? Ken Wayne. Uh-huh. And I think he's in jail now. We worked with, and then we did a three-way thing with Sid, Lord Humongous, the Sid Udy version. Mm-hmm. and the kid from Pittsburgh,
Shane Douglas.
Yeah. And was Sid and Shane, and mm-hmm. and then Sika and Coquina, who became
Yokozuna.
So uh-huh. And we ran a program with them, and with the three of us. And I mean, there was so much creative. We popped that territory, not, you know, the group, but, you know, Eddie, under Eddie's leadership. I mean, we blew the doors off of that territory for a solid year.
Yeah.
And so much great stuff.
Yeah. And Randy Colley, as another name that people probably don't talk about enough, right? What a veteran. I mean, an original Moondog, original member of Demolition.
He was the founder of Demolition, actually.
The first match.
It was his,
with the ideal.
Yeah, it was all him. And but he walked to the ring the first time he went out as Demolition for Vince.
Uh-huh.
And some of the fans started chanting Moondog. And they killed him out, and they killed him out of it.
Yeah, and right.
He never really recovered from the fallout of that. And you know, he passed away 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, not too long ago.
I got to see him right before he died.
Yeah, what was it like working with him? Because right, because you're still overall relatively young in the business, right? Jumping around.
No, I was relatively green. I mean, he'd call half the match for me from the ring apron. You know, because I mean, I'm, you know, with the heels calling the match, and he was calling his stuff and my stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That's okay.
He's such a tag. He did so much in tag team wrestling, you know, all those years, and it was a master class, you know. I mean,
yeah.
His strength wasn't the stick, you know.
Yeah.
If I didn't do anything worth a crap, I could talk.
Yeah.
it was a great partnership.
Yeah. And of course he knew that Southern style, especially, right? He knew.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, he knew Memphis, you know, Eddie's style was in your face, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What was it like working for Eddie as a booker, right? I mean,
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. And I had, look, if you really go back and look at the time I was there, the TV time that I got was significant, you know, but building the character, building the whole honor guard thing, the weeks of pursuing Mark Young, you know, and then becoming mm-hmm. Private Pyle, shaving his head, you know, I mean, just like all the creative that Eddie gave me a framework and said, go, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was really cool to be, you know, in a spot, you know, I mean, I wasn't by any means, I wasn't the top guy. But, you know, I had a role and I did what I was asked to do, you know, and one day we're doing promos in, we used to do TV on Mondays in Birmingham.
Uh-huh.
And you'd shoot 2 or 3 weeks of stuff at a time, you know?
Yep. Right.
And so we're in the fairgrounds arena in Birmingham, and we're doing promos, and you know, they'd have the heels, you know, would go first, and then the baby faces would, you know, follow it. And we were doing, Randy and I were doing something with Austin Idol, and I was hot that day, and you know, I was blistering it, and Idol, after two rounds, he finally said, uh-uh. He said, I'm going first. I can't follow the kid. So it was, that was kind of, you know, that was always a fond memory, you know.
Yeah.
I wish I had the 35-year, 40-year career he had, but you know, but
yeah,
I didn't choose to do that.
Yeah. Well, in a rather short period of time, right? You went from the Northeast U.S. and with the Savaldis to Western Canada for the Hearts, to the Southeast U.S. for Continental. That's all over the place. That's quite a range.
And then I went to work for Nelson and back in North Carolina for a bit.
Yeah. I mean, then, every territory had its own flavor, right?
Oh yeah. And then I went to Memphis. I finished in Memphis.
Yeah. So what's it like? Is it difficult as a wrestler jumping from territory? Is there a period where you have to kind of get a feel for the fans, what they like, what they're going to react to? Because you can't do the same things in every territory.
You know, I mean, didn't
to a certain extent.
Yeah, I guess, well, in Northern New England, I was arguably a baby face. I mean, I was world light heavyweight champion
at, for a minute.
I was, they needed the belt to put on somebody else. And the heel that had it, Eric Spratia, was difficult to do business with. And so, Angelo Savoldi said, you know, the kid may not do business. I said, okay. I said, I know what to do. So, because Gene Anderson had prepared me, for those. He said, Bobby, he said, there's going to be times. This is what's going to happen.
Yep.
You know, somebody doesn't want to do business or whatever, and you've got to take care of it, you know? And he had taught me a couple of hooker holds and a couple things. And I was always pretty good with my hands anyway. And so we get in the ring and we're going through the thing and we get ready to go to the finish. And the finish was just supposed to be a little baby face sunset flip thing, you know?
Uh-huh.
And he blocked the flip, and I said, all right, I get up, and, you know, I looked at him and I said, you better protect yourself. And I dotted him right between the eyes, dropped him and covered him. They give me the belt and I jump up and down. Anyway, that was that. And I could take the belt back to the dressing room. I handed it to Angelo. I said, this what you wanted? He went, yeah. But anyway, so I went from being a baby face. I go up to Canada. You know, I'm arguably a baby face ish. You know, I don't, you know, I didn't get, I don't think I had a chance to get over up there, honestly. Yeah. I don't think that was in the cards. But, you know, no sour grapes. I was glad to have had the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then to go down back down to the South as the DI, you know, Alabama, Memphis, and for Nelson and the Carolinas, it was arguably the same. You know, I did me, you know, and they hated me, and that worked, you know.
Yeah.
And if you gave me a live mic, I'll get them to hate me quicker. So I was fortunate that my style kind of translated, you know, and I had learned, you know, by the time I'd gotten, you know, I mean, I'd learned from Randy, I'd learned from Eddie, I'd learned, you know, I went to school, you know, I mean, every night, you know, we ride the road, you know, when I first got to Alabama, for example, I was riding, it was me, Sid Udy, and Downtown Bruno, you know?
Yep.
And just, you know, and then I traveled some with, Dirty White Boy, Tony.
Tony Anthony. Uh-huh.
Tony Anthony, who
yep.
was brilliant. Tom Pritchard is brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, I worked every night for a month with Danny Davis, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you got to listen, you know, the people will tell you, you know. In the territory, live shows, you know, TV was TV, whatever. But you know, live shows, a well-trained heel is going to listen for that volume level, you know, to know when to cut them off, when to blow the roof off the joint, you know. And I, you know, I got to believe that, you know, like I said, I wasn't Steamboat. I wasn't Flair by any means. But I believe that the people I worked with would tell you that they had good matches and, you know, and that I did my best for them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. How hard was it trying to have a career? I mean, during a period, it's kind of been a weird period, right? When the territories were starting to dry up a little bit, the number of places to work were decreasing. How hard was it to find consistent work, have a career during that time?
Well, it was a lot of baloney blowouts, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
We used to go get a pound of baloney, you get a loaf of bread, and you'd steal the mustard from the McDonald's.
Yeah.
But it was thin times, but you were grinding trying to get to, you know, at that time really New York or you know, WCW, whatever that was at the time. I forget which version it was.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, for instance, my roommate in Memphis, I was in Memphis for about a month before I decided I just couldn't do it anymore. And I was Undertaker.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was five of us in a one bedroom apartment, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But he was a year then away from being who he became, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, so we were all grinding, you know, we were all trying to make it to whatever next was, you know? And, you just tried to live as inexpensively as you could. And, you know, it wasn't easy by any means, you know what I mean? It was stressful as hell, but, yeah. But it was certainly, the memories, it's funny, you know, people think, well, you know, do you have good relationships with these guys? And the answer is no, because you're always trying to get above the wherever you were,
yeah.
You know, on the card, you know, you were trying to get to whatever next was. And that was hard, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you did business with people, you were professional with people. I mean, there were some people you wanted to kill. You know, there were people that were, you know, abusing themselves and, you know, all that. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of crazy nonsense, but it wasn't easy, you know, but
yeah.
It was what it was.
Yeah. So when did you finally know or decide that, hey, this is it, I'm hanging it up, I'm done? How did that come about?
Well, it's kind of, Nikita, Gene Ligon, and I owned three gyms in the Carolinas.
Okay.
And at one of the periods of time when I was working there for Nelson, I was, you know, I was home. I went to promote the gym at the baseball park in Gastonia, North Carolina, the Gastonia Rangers, which was a then single A Texas Ranger farm team with a 17-year-old Puerto Rican catcher by the name of Pudge Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And so I went over there and I met Roman Gabriel, who was, you know, former quarterback for in the NFL and blah, blah, blah. Well, Gabriel proceeds to tell me what I was doing on TV. Like, he was like, hey, you did this last week and all that. And was just, when I was working with Nelson for the, what did we call that? ACW.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, and Roman invited me to a golf tournament. And so I went to this golf tournament And I didn't know anything about golf. I'd never played golf at the time. And anyway, I'm in Memphis. And he calls me in Memphis and he says, "Hey, can you play in a tournament such and such a date in Rocky Mount, North Carolina?"
Hey, that's where I live. That's where I live now.
I know a lot about Rocky Mount, buddy.
Ain't much to know.
Well, I'm in Elizabeth City now. So anyway.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
So I said, "Well, Gabe," I said, "yeah." I said, "All right." I said, "How am I going to get there, though?" I said, "I'm in fucking Memphis." He said, "I'll fly you." I said, "Okay." I said, "Where are you going to fly me back to?" He said, "Memphis?" I said, "Nah, Boston." I said, "I'm retiring." And that's what I did. I got a flight. He flew me to, I went in on my very last match was in Henderson, Kentucky, in a racetrack, in a horse race track inside like the observation area, whatever. I mean, you know what I mean? It was a arena kind of thing. And my last match was with Dustin Runnels.
Mm-hmm.
And what's kind of interesting is that when I first started to work with Gene and Nelson, they would have me go down to the high school, to the, I forget which Mecklenburg high school they went to, East, I think,
mm-hmm.
and wrestle with Dustin and Brad Anderson and Dustin, who were both high school kids, because they needed somebody bigger to work with. And so I didn't know anything about amateur wrestling. So it was really good for me to learn, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, so it was ironic to be able to kind of finish up, you know, with Dustin. So,
yeah.
But I wrestled that night and I went in the dressing room and I think the next time we were supposed to be off for a couple of days. And, you know, next time we're supposed to work was TV on that Saturday coming up in Memphis. And Lawler says, "See you Saturday." I said, "No, boss." I said, "I'm all done."
Yeah.
I said, I won't be back. And because you know, my car had blown up. I mean, there was just too much going on. And my first wife that I, you know, had been technically engaged to for almost 10 years. She'd about had enough. And so that was that.
Yeah. So what are you up to currently? What was a quote unquote retirement life like for Bob? And
more like, you mean, what was life like?
Yeah. Regular life.
Yeah. I got into the sales business, and the last number of years I've been working in the golf business. I've run either as an assistant or, you know, I've helped operate golf courses.
Yeah. Do you have at all any involvement in professional wrestling or any interest? Do you watch much, or have you pretty much washed your hands?
Yeah, I'll watch this and that now and then. I will. You know, I'm always fascinated by, you know, what people are doing and how it's going. But now with all these like fan fests and all that, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, no one's ever asked me. So, you know, I haven't gone anywhere. You know, I had a pretty good run playing in celebrity golf tournaments for a number of years with Gabriel because of Roman. And, I played in a lot of golf tournaments and, but I'm not, you know, I have a couple of masks that Jack Lord, the bomber, make for me that I use when I do, I help out with some junior golf clinics. And the Crusher will come and, you know, tell the kids about golf etiquette under the mask. But other than that, you know, every now and then I'll, you know, talk to, you know, a couple of guys or whatever, you know. But, you know, when Randy died, that was really my, you know, oldest friend that, you know, I'd stayed in touch with. And so, you know, other than, you know, sitting around the golf course, I'll regale the boys with a few stories here and there that I can, if something comes to mind.
Yeah. But you're open, right? You're open to doing a
family. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've done a few of these things, like with you and, you know, I mean, if somebody asks, I'll talk, you know. I mean, it's, you know, I like to say I wasn't out there for a long time, but, you know, if you look back at the body of work that I did put up, it wasn't bad.
Yeah, so. You crammed a lot in your years. And hit a lot. And like I said, it's a very interesting time in wrestling, right? Because it was that kind of that transitional time from, you know, the territory days not being completely gone, but yet fading. It was right. There's this weird transitional time between kind of these two eras of wrestling almost.
And, yeah, it was a vortex.
Yeah. So, Bob, I appreciate you coming on and talking.
No problem, mate.
I probably could probably sit here and talk to you and pick your brain on. I could probably rattle off guys and you can tell stories for hours on specific guys. And maybe we'll do that in the future.
Let me know.
I just wanted to kind of hit the high spots, give an overview of your career. And it's fascinating. And we'll stay in touch and maybe we'll revisit and do a part two down the road.
All right, buddy. Thanks so much.
Hey, it's Bob Smith. And guess what? The outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the outdated Wrestling Hour. Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
All right, and welcome back. Thank you to Bob Carter for coming on and being my guest and that giving us that great interview. So much fun to talk to Bob. Hopefully you enjoyed that. Guys, go follow me on X. I'm there at The Dave Dynasty. That is the central best way to follow me on social media. Also, go check out all of the WrestleCopia network of podcasts. You can go to WrestleCopia.com or search for those shows on your favorite podcast platform. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library at ClassicWrestling.net, or you can download the Ultimate Classic Wrestling app on all of your devices. Guys, I also have a new partner, a new friend, a new sponsor, if you want to say, coming onto the show here soon. If you are a professional wrestling fan, particularly a nostalgic professional wrestling fan such as I am, you're going to enjoy this. More information coming up in the near future on that. The ads will start rolling here in the show, and there's going to be lots of interaction and partnership and things we're going to do with them, some interviews, some things happening. It's going to be very cool, very fun, so watch for that coming up. On next week's episode, my guest will be Travis Orndorff, the son of the legendary Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. That episode will be released right around Paul's birthday, what would have been Paul's birthday. And I had Travis on to talk about his father. I'm a huge fan of Paul Orndorff, and it was a pleasure to talk to Travis about his dad, not only about his career, but about the man behind the career, what the man was like at home, what the man was like as a father, It was a very, very wonderful chat with Travis, and I look forward to you hearing that on the next episode. So thank you again, guys, for all that you do. Make sure you subscribe to me on social media, particularly on X. Make sure you subscribe to my YouTube channel, because not only do you get all the episodes of the podcast, but there's also lots of other wrestling content and stuff on there for you. So go check that out. All the links are in the show notes. Excuse me. And thank you for all your support. So until next week, when my guest will be Travis Orndorff, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.